calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And every time Rush Limbaugh hears that theme music, he ups his OxyContin. Welcome to the program, my friends. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's the first hour of our Friday show. And, of course, Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, the only independent member of the House of Representatives, the longest serving member of the House, independent member of the House of Representatives in that body's august history, Congressman Bernie Sanders. Our toll-free number, 1-866-440-8466. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you here. The U.S. District Judge Anna Diggs Taylor yesterday says there are no hereditary kings in America and no powers not created by the Constitution.
Wow. Is that what she said?
That's what she said in her in her judgment.
Well, I think the importance of that decision is not only that it deals with the specifics of the phone tapping, but it goes beyond that, and she touches on it in that phrase, and that is that we have a president who I think honestly believes that he is above the law, that he can decide what's right and wrong, what's good and bad, and the Constitution of the United States doesn't matter all that much. The laws of the land don't matter all that much, and he can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, and that he is an imperial president.
You know, he's not the... Here's Richard Nixon.
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
He's not the first guy to think that.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's really quite unbelievable. And yet the backbone of what American democracy is about is that we are a nation of law, which means that all of us, from the president on down, is supposed to obey the law. And that's something that the president and his members of his administration have clearly forgotten. So I applaud the judge very much for that ruling. And as you well know, Tom, there are many, many instances, this just NSA phone tapping being one, where this president is acting very clearly in violation of the law. And probably the most openly outrageous is his signing agreements when he signs legislation and he says, oh, by the way, I will sign this legislation, but in fact, I don't intend to enforce all of the provisions in it because I disagree. And instead of vetoing the legislation and going through the political process that we have in Congress, he says, oh, I'll sign it. Doesn't matter really much because I disagree with this or that section of it, and I'm not going to enforce it. And I think that that is not only frightening for today, but that is a horrendous precedent for what happens to the future of our country, no matter who is the president. And what we have to be very, very clear about is that the president of the United States, members of Congress, the people, obey law. We don't like the law, you change the law. You don't ignore the law when you want.
Yeah, yeah. It's really quite mind-boggling.
It is, and these guys just never ever stop. But you know, hopefully they will be stopped in less than 3 months in the very important elections that are coming up. And I just hope that all of the listeners understand the significance of these elections, because if and I speak as an independent who is now working, you know, with Democrats to defeat the right-wing Bush agenda. If the Democrats gain control over the House, if the Democrats gain control over the Senate, and hopefully if they gain control over both bodies, the Bush right-wing agenda is finished. It's gone. And for the first time since Bush will have been president, there will be serious hearings and investigations on the misdeeds and the very, very poor performance of the Bush administration in so many areas. Now, I know I do meetings all over the state of Vermont, and I'm sure it's true all over America. People have very serious questions about how we got into Iraq in the first place. What did the president know? Is he telling us the truth when he says, hey, don't blame me for going into war in Iraq because the intelligence agencies, they told me that Iraq had weapons of destruction. Weapons of mass destruction. They told me that Al-Qaeda was linked to Iraq. They told me that Iraq was getting depleted uranium from Niger and so forth and so on. Is the president, in fact, telling us the truth? Well, you know what? There are a lot of people who think that may not be the case. And there are a lot of people, including myself, who think that we need some serious investigations, and that we need some of the people from the Bush administration to be testifying under oath about what they knew and when they knew it. Because many of us believe that it's just not fair to blame the intelligence agencies, because, in fact, a lot of intelligence was coming into the White House, which said, Mr. President, we're not sure about weapons of mass destruction. We don't believe that there was a link between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, as evil a guy as Saddam Hussein was and is. We don't believe that Iraq was getting depleted uranium from Niger and so forth and so on. Imagine the significance of those hearings. Imagine if we really understood and learned about how incompetent Bush and his people were with Hurricane Katrina, how unprepared they were, and why were they so unprepared for the war in Iraq, so that the only people who seem to be benefiting are Halliburton and these other big contractors who were able to win no-bid contractors. On and on it goes. So the significance of this election is, A, we stopped the right-wing drift, not drift, but strong right-wing movement in this country, and, B, we start understanding how we got to where we are, and, number three, we start beginning to address the real needs facing ordinary Americans rather than worrying about millionaires and billionaires. So that's why this election is so terribly important.
It really is. Bernie, yesterday on Countdown with Keith Olbermann, Keith had Jonathan Turley on. He's a professor of law at George Washington University Law School and the legal expert that MSNBC and NBC use. And he made an interesting observation. I have a 30-second clip. Do you mind if I play this?
No,
I'd like to get your take on this. He's talking about the NSA decision yesterday.
Is that the court here is rejecting the authority that the White House has used, not just for the NSA surveillance, but a number of other programs. It's also broader in its implications. As you noted, most of us thought the question of the unlawfulness of the program was the easy one. I mean, we despite what Gonzalez says, that the authority is clear, no one else seems to be able to see it. The real tough question is what we would do about it. If a court of appeals upholds this judge, it means that the president could well have committed a federal crime, not once, but 30 times. And so that's the difficult implication.
Now, I've heard people calling for, you know, if the president actually committed a crime that has criminal penalties, throw the bum in jail kind of thing. But isn't impeachment the penalty that the Constitution
calls
for?
Well, Tom, as we've said many times on the show, the first thing that has to happen is those questions have got to be asked in Congress. They're not going to be asked so long as the president of the United States has the protection of the Republican leadership in the Republican House. So if the Republicans continue to control the House and the Senate, the questions that were just raised will never be discussed in Congress.
Yeah, and so, this is a relatively conservative law professor.
This is the issue that has to be, just in a sense what I was saying. So it goes beyond NSA phone tapping. It goes to the behavior of the Bush administration in many, many areas. And those questions have never been challenged. Now, if the Democrats gain control over the House, I can assure you John Conyers of Michigan will be asking many of those questions. If they gain control over the Senate, my colleague from Vermont, Senator Patrick Leahy, I believe, will be asking many of those questions. And that is why this election is terribly important. If the Republicans continue to retain control, those questions, in my view, will not be asked, will never be asked.
Yeah. We had Senator Byron Dorgan on the program a couple days ago, or actually it was a week or so ago, and he has a new book out, and he's strongly taking the position that we need to defend the middle class in America, that the death of the middle class, the economic death of the middle class, is the death of democracy in the United States. I was struck by how he gets it.
Do you think certainly one of the better members of the United States Senate, and he and I worked closely together on a number of issues, especially trade issues, when he was in the House. And what Byron is talking about, and he is absolutely right, is an issue which we just don't talk about terribly much in the media. We don't talk about in the Congress. In fact, the President of the United States and Cheney and all these other guys, they're on the media every other day telling you how great everything is going. Man, this economy is just doing so great. And what we have got to say is, well, they're right in a sense. For millionaires and billionaires and for their campaign contributors and for the heads of the large multinational corporations for whom they work, the truth is the economy is doing very, very well. Those guys have never had it so good. But for the middle class, what you're seeing is in the last five consecutive years, family median income has gone down. We have lost 2.9 million good-paying manufacturing jobs. Our friends in Washington, the present Republican leadership, just haven't quite gotten around to raise a $5.15 minimum wage, and 5 million more Americans have slipped into poverty.
It's quite an indictment. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Brunch with Bernie, our segment, our hour today. Our number, 866-440-8466. Give us a call. It's 16 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
The latest news has struck me funny. It's all about greed, boys, and it's all about money. Well, this great nation is in distress. I've got to get something off of my chest. November's coming and it won't be long. When you cast your vote, please don't vote wrong. Vote away those blues.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Telling the truth to the multinational corporations. We'd really rather you weren't all that familiar with. Tom Hartman here with you. By the way, in the shameless plug department, my new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class, is just started shipping. It's available now on Amazon Books. I will be doing a book signing at Powell's Books on September 5th. And on September 9th at Vox Pop in New York, in Brooklyn, New York. And there are more, we're doing a tour all around the United States to promote this book. More information as time rolls out. Pardon me?
Congratulations on the book, because these are exactly the issues that we need to discuss and demand that Congress respond to. The middle class is falling apart. Poverty is increasing, the gap between the rich and the poor is growing wider, and this is not the America that we should be having. So I applaud you for raising consciousness on the issue.
Thank you, Bernie. In fact, you are one of my inspirations in that area.
Thank you.
You really and truly are. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. And Mark in Houston, Texas, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, Congressman. I wonder if you would be supportive of legislation that would put minimum wage to the congressional wage, whereby if the Congress got a minimum wage, it would go up.
You're breaking up, Mark, but I think...
I think I got the point, Mark. Yeah, and the answer is yes. Many of us have demanded that there not be any increase, any COLA increase, salary increase for members of Congress until the minimum wage is raised. Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, it's on and on. It's not only that Congress gets an increase in its COLA, tax breaks for millionaires, tax breaks for billionaires, corporate welfare for large corporations, but we somehow can't raise the minimum wage in Washington above $5.15 an hour. Outrageous.
Hank in Door, Michigan on the line. Hey, Hank, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hey, guys. What amazes me is there's a lot of Joe Sixpack Republicans out there that have the same financial problems and everything else that all the Democrats do, but yet they stand behind George Bush and his policies. What do we have to do to change these people or get the word out that, they're going broke like everybody else? You know, you guys got to change your mind.
Hank, you have raised a very profound question, and that is the most important political question that we can discuss, because the truth of the matter is, the main source of political strength from the Republican Party is not millionaires and billionaires. Sure, they have all kinds of money. Yes, they fund the Republican Party, but they're just a relatively few votes. As Hank indicates, there are millions of people who do not have any health insurance, can't afford to send their kids to college, are working for $6 or $7 an hour, and they keep voting against their own best interest. Now, why is that? Well, there are a couple of reasons. Number one, I think what Karl Rove and his friends have managed to do is come up with policies which seek to divide the American people based on religious views, et cetera, et cetera. During the last campaign, Tom, you'll remember that there was a mailing piece that went out. I can't remember. I think Arkansas, but somewhere in the South.
Mm-hmm.
during the presidential election and said that if John Kerry won or the Democrats won, the Bible would be banned.
Right. Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah, it was sent out to thousands, tens of thousands of people.
All right. So what you're dealing with is a party, the Republican Party, which among many other things lies a whole lot of time. They have made our country less secure internationally and certainly less secure in terms of our ability to deal with international terrorism. And yet they will then accuse people who oppose the war in Iraq or other policies that somehow we are not strong in defending the American people from terrorism. They divide our nation up on the abortion issue. They are certainly going to go as hard as they can on the issue of gay marriage and so forth and so on. They will lie about what Congress or what some of us, you know, plan about or think about the issue of guns, et cetera, et cetera. So, number one, in their arsenal, they lie a whole lot, and we should be very clear about that. And number two, they attempt to divide people up rather than, as many of us try to do, bring people together, understanding, sure, on this or that issue, there may be disagreements. Last point on this issue that Hank raised is, in truth, the Democrats have not been as strong as they should be in fighting the economic struggles of the middle class. Byron Dorgan, who we mentioned a moment ago, is one of the exceptions. So a lot of people look out there and they say, well, you know, what are the Democrats doing on health care? Have they given us a national health care program? Have they made college education more affordable? What about on trade? What about on trade? Are we stopping the loss of millions of good-paying jobs going to China? Where are the Democrats on that issue? So part of the problem is there has not been a clear differentiation between the Democrats and the Republicans on economic issues, and then on many of these social and cultural issues, the Republican Party has tried to divide the population.
Yeah, divide and conquer. They're using the old Roman technique.
I think their luck is running out, and their string is getting very much shorter, because you're seeing many conservatives and evangelicals who understand the failure of the Bush administration and the need to move this country in a very different direction.
Yeah, they're saying these folks are not just grasping for political power. They're putting literally the planet at risk, and it's not a good thing. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, 866-440-8466. Our number, 27 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Just because there's arsenic in the water, and just because there's mercury in the air, just because the corporations run the White House, don't mean he don't care. And just because he's out of touch with people and answers only to the man upstairs, just because he'd like to take us all to Jesus, don't mean he don't care.
And welcome. Yeah, he's a compassionate conservative. Welcome back. 35 minutes past the hour here on the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Program. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Bernie, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm right here, Tom, and I'm going to unfortunately have to leave a little bit early from the program this afternoon. There is a funeral here in Sharon, Vermont for a soldier that was killed in Iraq, and I certainly want to be there on time.
I understand. So we'll take calls here and right up through the next break, and then I'll finish it up.
Okay.
So 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. David in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
Good.
Hey, I was, well, first of all, let me say, Congressman, I'm looking forward to seeing you serve alongside of Bob Casey in the Senate after November. So
thank you very much.
Do your best and work on him a little bit, too, if you will. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your reform policies for or your reform on drug policies in the United States, in particular things like drug courts and maybe some of the things you're looking to do once you become a senator to reform our drug policies.
Here's what I think. I mean, I think the heart of the tragedy is we have just huge numbers. I don't know exactly the number, but a whole lot of people who are sitting in jail right now whose lives are being destroyed for drug use at great cost to the taxpayers of this country. So I think clearly the solution is that we want to make sure that we do a better job in preventing drug abuse among young people. And it makes me very, very sad to see so many people getting their lives destroyed. And second of all, I think we're going to need, and I think a number of states are moving forward and saying, why are we keeping nonviolent people in jail at great expense to the taxpayers when we have a better approach? And I think some of the states now are putting people under very tight surveillance, not surveillance, but what's the word that I want?
During my house arrest kind of things?
Yeah, exactly, mm-hmm. Which makes a lot more sense for the individual and for the and for the taxpayer. So I think we want to move in that direction. We want to do our best to make sure the young people do not turn to drugs. We don't want to run up huge public expenditures keeping nonviolent people behind bars. And we also want to see those people return to their lives and gain full employment as soon as possible.
Rick in Evansville, Indiana, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hey, Mr. Sanders?
Yes.
Yeah, I wanted your opinion on a standard voting process across the nation before the elections.
Tom, I didn't hear that.
He was asking if it's possible to have a standardized voting method across the nation, and I believe the Constitution says that the states
do determine that. But yeah. I think what Rick is the question that Rick is raising is the question that literally millions of people are talking about, and is their fear that the votes that they cast on touchscreen machines may not, in fact, be accurately counted. And I think there are more and more people who are not into conspiracy theory who worry that some of these machines, in fact, can be hacked. In Washington right now in Congress, I'm on board legislation that would provide a paper trail for all touchscreen machines. But in addition to that, I think that so long as people have doubts about the accuracy of these machines, I would much prefer, to be honest with you, to move toward paper ballots. I would rather take an extra hour to count the votes rather than to have many people continue to fear that the vote they cast was not accurately counted.
Yeah, well, it works for every European country, Canada, Mexico, everybody else. Why shouldn't it work for us?
Yes.
It's Jim in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yes, what I'd like to ask is, where does Alberto Gonzalez get the authority and the attitude that he shows when he speaks to our inspector in the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, or anywhere, including after this last judge's findings? Who gives him the authority to disregard the law, disregard the Constitution? And I think he's probably the worst attorney general, and he cares absolutely nothing for the Constitution. Where does he get this authority and attitude from?
Well, let me answer it very simply, Jim. He gets the authority given to him by the President of the United States, who appointed him to that position. And when he speaks on these issues, he is reflecting the views of the President of the United States. And I share your concern, but that's where it comes from. It's from the President.
Chicken, Dover, Delaware. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
I think you're Congressman Sanders. I think you're putting the cart before the horse. The Constitution says the president can be impeached if found guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors. And the president has wiretapped illegally, and the head of the NSA have wiretapped illegally. Why haven't they been indicted? Not
well.
Been
I tell you what.
Indicted.
I'm sorry. You know what? Why don't you call up the Speaker of the House and ask them that question? Why don't you call up the Republican leadership? And the answer is, you know, Tom and I have talked about this a dozen times. You have a Republican leadership in the House and the Senate who act, by and large, as a rubber stamp for the White House. And that is the answer to your question. And if you want serious investigations in fact, as to what has gone on in the White House, you're going to have to get rid of that leadership. If that leadership remains, nothing will be changed. These guys work together. I am on the House Government Reform Committee, which has oversight jurisdiction in the House. And what I can tell you, the facts are not disputable, that when Bill Clinton was president, almost every month there was another hearing, and I'm not talking about Monica Lewinsky. There was another hearing about this or that alleged misconduct of the Clinton administration. Since George Bush has been president, no serious investigations in the House Government Reform Committee have taken place on anything that Bush has done. And that's the answer. So if people want to understand what is going on, what could happen, then you're going to have to work very hard in the next 11 weeks, because if the Republicans continue to retain control, we'll be talking about this issue till the cows come home and nothing is going to happen.
Mike in Grand Rapids, well said. Mike in Grand Rapids, Michigan, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, hi, Tom, and hi, Congressman.
Hi.
I would just like to know a couple of things, and I'll get off the phone and listen. I'm very concerned about the number of Americans that are dying in Iraq at such a high cost in order to fight terrorism, because it seems just a little bit ironic. And I'm also concerned about the upcoming elections and what we can do or what is being done to prevent these elections from being rigged and stolen also.
Okay. Well, we talked about that one. Let me say this. I understand that people are concerned about touchscreen balloting and all that stuff. But the fact of the matter is, I think sometimes people are using that as an excuse so as not to get involved in the day-to-day difficult work of political organizing and educating and registering voters and making sure that people vote. We have now the opportunity to end Republican one-party government in the House and the Senate. We will be able to do that if millions of people start talking to their neighbors, making sure that their friends are registered to vote, and that we bring out those people. The Republicans obviously do a very bad job in public policy. They are moving this country in the wrong direction on almost every issue that anybody can think about. But you know what they do a very good job at? They are very good at politics. They are very good at negative advertising. They are very, very good at getting out their supporters. So to answer Mike's question, it's not just the war in Iraq, which is just a horrible nightmare right now. It's not just the fact that we have lost almost 2,600 Americans and 19,000 are wounded and over $300 billion has been spent. It is so many issues out there. But to answer Mike's question, people are going to have to work very, very, very hard in the next 11 weeks, because if we do not, you may wake up the day after the election and find Republicans are controlling the House, Republicans are controlling the Senate, and all of the concerns and questions that people have, they're going to continue.
Yeah, what I say is, if you think they're going to steal 5 million votes, we need to turn out 6 million.
just
tip a hat to the whole thing.
Sometimes, Tom, people use that, and then the next thing, I'm not going to vote, or I'm not going to get involved.
No, that's my point. I mean, even if we have concerns about these things, that means it's even more important that we turn out
right.
to vote.
That's exactly right.
And it's even more important that we get people out on election day and get them to the polls. And it's even more important that we inform people about the issues.
Right now in the state of Vermont, we have people who are have knocked on over 50,000 doors talking to people in the state. This is going on all over this country, from serious people who want to change America. And that's what all of us have got to do in the best way that we can do it.
Yeah, well said. I know you have to go to a funeral, Bernie. I believe our break is going to begin here any second. So, there it is. So
right,
thank you so much for being with us.
Okay,
today.
We'll see you next week.
Great. Good
Take
talking.
Care. Bye-bye.
Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment. I'll continue taking your calls, if you'd like. Any topic you'd like right after the break. It's 45 minutes past the hour. Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. It's the Tom Hartman radio program.
You're You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
If you knew that you would die today, you saw the face of God and love, would you change? Would you change? If you knew that love can't break your heart, when you're down so low, you cannot fall, would you change? Would you change?
And welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 1-866-440-8466, our phone number. Bernie has gone off to a funeral. I'm here. Hey, Lynn in Tacoma, Washington. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I really love your show. I saw you in Seattle. Love your bumper music with all original artists doing wonderful alternative music. Love Bernie.
Thank you.
Noticed something on the news last hour just before your program started. I think it's CBS News. They alluded to the plot in London as the alleged plot in London.
Oh, that's interesting.
I have not heard that before. I thought that was a little departure from
well,
the
what's,
usual.
You know, what's starting to come out, and there's been a few articles written about this that have, you know, mostly been kind of op-ed pieces in major American newspapers, is that, you know, none of these guys had visas yet for the United States. Several of them didn't even have passports. They had not actually built a bomb. There was, you know, no bomb had been built. There was, and the London police, there was one guy who was going to do a dry run. He was just going to take a flight to the United States and back just to, you know, scope out the plane. And they wanted him to do that so that they could have some evidence that he was actually intending to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And Bush said, no, no, we need political cover right now. We need to, you know, this will help us get Lieberman in and blow out Lamont. And basically, we, our domestic political considerations forced the British to possibly screw up an investigation. So,
isn't that just amazing?
It really is. It's
so
really
much is at stake. And thank you so much for the work that you do. Wow.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Lynn. I appreciate the call. Thank you.
Yes, thanks, Tom.
Carl in North Carolina. Hey, Carl, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Tom. I love your show, man. And Representative Sanders is inspiration to know that he is out there working for us.
Yeah,
but what's really on my mind is I'm despairing a little bit on taking back America just because the Democrats don't seem to realize how to use the media like the neocons do. You know, they're just the masters of that catchphrase and the 15-second soundbite. And I see so many people out here that I ran into, voters, are going to make their voting decisions.
Here's the fundamental problem, Carl. And it's the problem that you know, the Native Americans faced, for example, when the Europeans first started just, you know, running them down and killing them off. And that is, in order to confront something that you consider to be wrong, immoral, do you become it? And the Democrats, to their credit, up until this point, have been unwilling to engage in deceit and lies in order to win elections. Now, you know, there are many folks who argue that they should be willing to, that they must be willing to, but so far the Democratic Party has kept its integrity intact. The Republican Party is not at all reluctant to engage in deceit and lies because they really and truly believe that their end is so noble and so important that any means justifies it. The Democrats don't buy into that fascistic thinking, and so we have this conundrum. And I believe that if the truth gets out, that if enough people wake up and the truth gets out, that the Democrats can win without having to resort to lies.
Well, I'm hoping that it's not, doesn't have to be lies and deception, but just like I say, that I think the attention span of the American voter is just shorter, and
more effective communication.
Tailor a message to that. It has to necessarily be lies and deception. It just has to be catchy and easily digestible.
Yeah, more effective communication. Well, I won't disagree with you there, Carl. And in fact, I've been doing a series of articles on common dreams. And a couple of years ago, I did a whole series that's available on our website on use of neurolinguistic programming. That is good communication techniques to hone and fine tune political messages. So, yeah, I in that regard, I hope the Democrats get their act together. Thanks a lot, Carl, for the call. I appreciate it. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Is Bernie gone now?
He's gone, yeah. He's at a funeral.
I think maybe he misunderstood slightly the question a while back. that the gentleman had who called and asked about the cart before the horse. I think the question that gentleman was asking was, irrespective of the political will for the Republicans to impeach Bush, which they don't have at all, that's zero, what about the criminal justice system? If indeed this wiretapping has been a criminal act, a violation of federal law, then never mind the impeachment process, Bush should be indicted by the criminal justice system, should he not?
Well, yes and no. First of all, the criminal justice system is headed up right now by Alberto Gonzalez and John Poindexter. So, I mean, you know, it's unlikely Bush is in charge of the criminal justice system. And second, there is this issue of sovereign immunity. At a certain level, Bush is immune from prosecution while he's in office. And so the correct remedy for a president committing a crime really and truly is impeachment.
But does the Constitution actually say that impeachment only, and he can't be indicted while in office, or is the Constitution silent about that?
I know that the Constitution provides for impeachment for high crimes and misdemeanors. It doesn't exclude people from being prosecuted, but this doctrine of sovereign immunity that somebody cannot be prosecuted for some crimes when they are in office is very real.
That's a constitutional precept, though?
I believe so, and I have to say, Rick, this is an area where I just don't know that much about.
Well, I don't either.
We need to get a good constitutional scholar on here and ask him, because
maybe I'll look at the Constitution after I get off the phone here.
Well, I've read it a whole bunch of times, and I can tell you I don't think there's anything in there that will answer this question for you and I. I think that it's going to be a whole series of precedents in the Supreme Court and other similar situations that will establish that.
Have a good day.
Thanks a lot, Rick. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. We'll be back with your calls and more. In fact, I have complete directions here on how to build the TATP bomb, the kind of bomb that they were talking about for the airplanes. This is going to curl your hair. And what's going to curl your hair most about it is why it is that only the United States and the United Kingdom are stopping liquids and saying people can't wear gel bras on airplanes. 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Authorities warning women not to wear gel bras as worries of possible female bombers increase. This is the headline from ABC News. U.S. authorities are advising women not to wear gel bras on airplanes as information developed in the foiled London plot points to an expanding role for women in smuggling explosives onto an aircraft. Well, all this liquid stuff. Why is it that France is not taking away people's liquids? Why, parts of Paris were burned down by Muslims protesting. Why is it that Spain is not taking away liquids from people getting on airplanes? They had a train that was bombed. Why is it only the United States and the United Kingdom, where we have politicians who are in big trouble over Iraq, are making it so difficult for their passengers? Could it be that it provides the necessary element of sacrifice to cause people to feel like you're really at war, so that you'll really vote for the war president and his party? Consider this. This from the 12thharmonic.net website blog, and it's a which I believe originated with the Register in the UK. UK terror plot, what's really going on, by Craig Murray. TATP is the substance that the Bushies and the Blairies are suggesting these guys were going to make, that involves hydrogen peroxide, acetone, and sulfuric acid. In other words, the liquids that have to be smuggled onto the plane. Here's how you make this stuff. First, and I sharing this with you from this blog. First, you've got to get adequately concentrated hydrogen peroxide. I talked about this a few days ago, last week, I believe it was. It has to be essentially pure hydrogen peroxide. The stuff they sell in the drugstores is 3%. So you'd have to either, like, boil it down to concentrate it, which is a very dangerous thing, and by and large doesn't work, or you'd have to buy pure hydrogen peroxide, which means you'd have to go to a you know, manufacturing supply, you know, a chemical warehouse. And it's risky stuff, pure hydrogen peroxide. So let's assume that you can obtain it in the required concentration, or you can cook it from a dilute solution without ruining your operation. Fine. The remaining ingredients, acetone and sulfuric acid, are pretty easy to obtain, so we can assume that you've got those on hand. Now for the fun part. Notes Craig Murray in this blog. Now for the fun part. Take your hydrogen peroxide, acetone, and sulfuric acid, measure them very carefully, and put them into drink bottles for convenient smuggling onto a plane. It's all right to mix the peroxide and acetone in one container so long as it remains cool. Don't forget to bring several frozen gel packs, preferably in a styrofoam chiller, deceptively marked perishable foods, a thermometer, a large beaker, a stirring rod, and a medicine dropper because you're going to need them. It's best to fly first class and order champagne. Why? Because it'll come with a bucket full of ice water, which you're going to need. Especially if you can get those cold gel packs to supplement the ice and you have a styrofoam chiller handy for insulation, this may get you through the process without catching yourself on fire. Okay, here, once the plane is over the ocean, very discreetly bring all of your gear into the bathroom. You might need to make several trips to avoid drawing attention. Once your kit is in place, put a beaker containing the peroxide acetone mixture into the ice water bath. This is the champagne bucket. And start adding the sulfuric acid. You have to add it, however, drop by drop while stirring constantly. If you just pour it in, it'll blow up in your face. The plane won't go down, but you will. So you put it in drop by drop, and you watch the temperature with the thermometer that's in there, because as you add the acid, this is going to start heating up. So you have to add the acid very slowly. It could take as much as an hour. If it gets too hot, it will blow up. Again, not in all probability enough at that point to take out an airplane, but enough to take out you. After a few hours, assuming by some miracle that the fumes haven't overcome you, because as soon as you open the beaker of sulfuric acid, the smell of rotten eggs is going to overpower everybody in the plane, and your eyes are going to start to burn, and your nose and mucous membranes are going to start going. After a few hours, assuming by some miracle that the fumes haven't overcome you or alerted passengers or the flight crew to your activities, you will have a quantity of TATP with which to carry out your mission. All you need to do then is, at that point, it's a fairly liquid substance. You need to dry it out for an hour or two. Let it cool down and evaporate some of the water out of it. Maybe spread it on a seat or something. I don't know. And then you can ignite it with your camera. Sound feasible? By the way, this is no secret what I'm sharing with you. I mean, you've got security guys demonstrating it on TV. But the point is that to say, oh, you can't take that toothpaste. I mean, we have gone into hysterical overdrive. Who are the real terrorists? We just had a court case that was decided, I mean, just, what, this morning. It's in the news that there is a group of people in the United States who last year killed 500,000 Americans, 500,000 Americans. Now, where are the real risks? What are the things that we should be really and truly worried about? These people, by the way, have been brought before Congress and were asked about their activities.
Please consider yourself to be under oath.
Yes or no? Do you believe nicotine is not addictive?
I believe nicotine is not addictive, yes.
Congressman, cigarettes and nicotine clearly do not meet the classic definitions of addiction.
I don't believe that nicotine or our products are addictive.
I believe that nicotine is not addictive. I believe that nicotine is not addictive.
And I too believe that nicotine is not addictive.
Now, before we start asking people to get naked before they get on airplanes, shouldn't we be looking at the real risks out there? Here we have 500,000 people a year dying from nicotine. And now a new study, by the way, just came out today saying that all tobacco exposure is harmful. Researchers from McMaster University in Ontario, Canada, calculating the risk of heart attack from various forms of active tobacco use, concluded all forms of exposure to tobacco, smoking, chewing, or inhaling secondhand smoke, increased the risk of heart attack by up to 300%. This is a study that was published in The Lancet, the British Journal of Medicine, including data from over 27,000 people in 52 countries. The researchers found that tobacco use in any form is harmful. Or drunk drivers. 50,000 people a year in the United States killed by drunk drivers. Or George Bush sending you off to Iraq. I mean, where should our fears, if we're going to be driven by fear, really be? Where should our concern really be? Of course we want to have some, you know, rational level of security. But there's a reason why these guys want us to be hysterical. Because they rule by fear. And people who rule by fear are properly called terrorists. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, Franklin in West Virginia. Hey, Franklin, what's on your mind today?
Tom, first of all, I don't know anybody could get on a plane and stay in the bathroom there for an hour or three without drawing some kind of attention to start with.
While the fumes of rotten eggs are pouring out and their mucous membranes are melting in front of them.
Absolutely. Yeah. But Tom, I wanted to throw out this theory. Is it possible the Bush administration knew that the district judge was going to hand down her ruling that the NSA wiretapping was illegal, and then to try and, tamp down the hue and cry, they pushed them to reveal this alleged bomb plot in London to get the public kind of, mesmerized.
And, well, we know that they pushed them to reveal the bomb plot early, that the British didn't want to do it. The conventional wisdom is that they did that because they wanted to be able to trash Lieberman's opponent, in that race. I suspect, however, that pressure might have been put on the Thai government to arrest this Mark Cass or whatever his name is, this guy who has confessed to killing JonBenet Ramsey, that pressure might have been put on the Thai government to bust him on that day. That wouldn't surprise me at all. You know, I mean, these guys are masters at this kind of stuff, Franklin.
So, very good. Thanks, yeah. Tom.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. I mean, that was the first thing that came into my mind yesterday when the story came down. That, oh, JonBenet Ramsey's killer's been found. I thought, okay, this is the day the Bushies are going to dump some big story. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Mission accomplished, horns blare. Mission accomplished, hot air. It went without a flaw, the shock filled them with awe. The evildoer's done, like burgers on a bun. Mission accomplished, God bless. Mission accomplished, B.S. Yeah, Rumsfeld, he was right. The world is black and white. Mission accomplished. That's right.
Yes, the world may hate us. We may be viewed with disdain. They may think poorly of us. We might be creating 1,000 terrorists a day all over the world. But the Republicans get reelected. Or maybe not. By the way, our bomb-making instructions will be up as the Air America Daily Audio on the AirAmericaRadio.com or AirAmerica.com website, should you know anybody who needs them. Diana in Santa Rosa, Florida. Hey, Diana, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. You and Bernie are my two favorite Friday men.
Well, thank you.
And I took your advice. I found those progressive candidates, and I'm supporting them. But I'm really upset with all the corporate right-wing hate speech that comes out over the airwaves. And we need to do something about that. I'm not talking about scaling back freedom of speech. I'm talking about calling somebody an Al-Qaeda candidate. And just a smear. That is not freedom of speech, not to me.
Well, and that was not a talk show host who said that. That was I think it was Chuck Roberts, wasn't it? That was
yes.
I'm
talking about
a news reporter,
TV and radio.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, they're increasingly, for example, they're buying into the use of the phrase Democrat Party. There ain't no such thing as the Democrat Party. It's the Democratic Party, named so by Thomas Jefferson. And
I feel like pinching somebody's head when they say Islamofascist.
Yeah.
There's a billion Muslims out there. How are you going to racially profile them?
Well, not only that, fascism is the merger of corporate and state interests, and that's not what the Islamists want. They are Islamic theocrats. They're not fascists. They're theocrats. They want a government ruled by religion, which, by the way, is the same thing that a lot of the Bushies want, which is why they don't want to use the word theocracy, because they would be revealing themselves. Diana, thank you for your call and for your kind comments.
Well, we need more Tom Hartmans.
Okay, thank you. Bless you. And here is Joe McCarthy. This is, you know, this isn't when it started, but this is when it started. He using the phrase Democrat Party as a slur. This was the macaca of 1953. Here's Joe McCarthy.
Using not merely the communists, but the fellow travelers, the deluded liberals, the egghead.
Here comes.
And some of my good friends in both the Democrat and Republican Party, who can become heroes overnight in the eyes of the left-wing press if they will join with the Jaffel Pack.
See, he's talking about the people who are criticizing him, right? But referring to the Democrat Party. Okay, that was Joe McCarthy. This is a montage of commentators on major national networks put together. You can get the whole thing over at MediaMatters.org.
Democrat primary.
Democrat.
Democrat primary.
Democrat party.
Democrat primary.
Democrat Congress.
And there ain't no such thing. A Democrat is a member of the Democratic Party. But Newt Gingrich and Frank Luntz decided that Democrat, especially if you emphasize the word rat at the end, sounds worse than Democratic, which sounds actually kind of pleasant. It sounds nice. It sounds friendly. And so they're like, you know, no, we're not going to use Democratic. We're going to use Democrat. And it just makes me absolutely crazy. And when I see representatives of the Democratic Party on TV sit with some Republican who refers to the Democrat Party, which does not exist, and they let it slide by without saying, wait a minute, there's no such thing as a Democrat Party. It's the Democratic Party. And I realize that Frank Luntz and Newt Gingrich back in the 80s said, hey, Democratic sounds too friendly. It sounds too Democratic. So don't call them that anymore. And you got Joe McCarthy, the clip that I just played you a minute ago, using it as a slur, Democrat Party. They're going back to that. Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service is with us from Washington, D.C. Hey, Ellen, what's happening there?
The president held his economic conference today at Camp David, and he tried to focus on the economy and his great message about the economy, although those of us who have some questions about it, are questioning about that. He's talking about how many jobs he added. But then, of course, the press was not buying his feel-good press conference, and so they were asked about Lebanon, and they said, well, how did Hezbollah suffer such a bad defeat, as the president claims? And then he said, well, when people take a sober look at what happened in Lebanon, they'll realize that destruction was caused by Hezbollah, and that Hezbollah caused the crisis, and that Hezbollah kidnapped the soldiers. I mean, he would not deal at all with the fact that even 65% of Israelis don't see it this way.
Interesting. Yeah, well,
then he was asked about the French peacekeeping commitment, and he said that essentially diplomacy and how the fact that they're not committing many troops, and he said, well, diplomacy takes a while, as you know. And then he just talked about how we're going to continue to work at it. And then he said, France has said they'll send some troops. We're hoping they'll send some more. And so he just sort of went over that. North Korea, he said, well, I'm not going to reveal the information that we have. And then on wiretapping, he said, we're going to go all the way basically to the Supreme Court.
Amazing. Ellen, thank you for the update. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Great to hear from you. Ellen Ratner, talkradionews.com. It's 27 minutes past the hour. Truth and common sense in broadcasting. We'll be right back.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
To go off to that war and welcome back. Yes, let's impeach the president. Good plan. Thank you, Neil Young. Welcome back. 35 minutes past the hour, the Tom Hartman radio program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. Carolyn in Tempe, Arizona. Hey, Carolyn, welcome to the program.
Hi there, Tom. I got talking points, too, but they happen to be the truth.
Okay.
Like people's voting records, you know.
There you go.
And we just had a follow-up on our little Team Red-Handed through Move On with J.D. Hayworth yesterday. You recall we did a video of him back on August 1st at his ritzy fundraiser. You know, that's all over the Internet.
That's
on
great.
Every blog, lefty blog, Daily Coast linked to it.
That's marvelous.
It's amazing. They love it. But the problem is we have spent hours in triple-degree heat this week, three different times, bird-dogging J.D. everywhere he goes. We show up with the red hands, big foam red-handed, caught red-handed,
right.
Color signs, J.D. Hayworth, caught red-handed.
Right. For our listeners who don't know, explain what he was caught red-handed at and who he is.
Yeah, well, there are a number of things. We highlighted the first, back on August 1st, we highlighted the $169,940 he took for big oil.
Right. This is Republican Congressman J.D. Hayworth.
Yes. And then he turned around and voted to give billions in tax breaks to them. So he's not representing us. This week, we were highlighting his support for war profiteering companies. He took $11,000 from them, and he turned around and voted against having any investigations.
It's amazing. You know, these guys, Carolyn, are giving prostitution a bad name.
I know.
They take such little money for what they give out. I mean, it's just, it's amazing.
Well, I know. And you know what's funny about that is some people say, well, $11,000. Well, so what? And they say, well, that's not much. And they all do it. And my answer to that is, okay, so you're telling me I have employees. And if I have an employee that steals $100 from me instead of $5,000, I'm going to keep him on, keep employing him because he didn't take that much?
Right. I mean, essentially, yeah, it's the moral equivalent.
You know, I mean, it's asinine.
It's crazy.
But it was pretty funny. Have you ever heard of the Billionaires for Bush?
Oh, yeah. We play their stuff as bumper music all the time.
Oh, okay. They showed up yesterday.
Oh, great.
As a counter-protest. And their signs are just fabulous. You know, support crony capitalism. It works for me.
Yes.
And then the other one, there's another one. Corporations are people, too.
There you go. Yes.
You know, well, leave no billionaire behind.
Yep.
And survival of the richest.
Yes.
You know, they are really choice.
So, Carolyn, what's the point that you wanted to make?
Yeah, well, it's just that, you know, we've done, you know, we can't get the mainstream media to cover this in Arizona, and it's just totally bizarre because here we are citizens, and we're just trying to get the man's voting record, everything that's sourced.
Yeah. Well, you know, this program is on the air in Phoenix. It's time delayed, so we don't get the live calls from Phoenix.
Right.
But we're on the air on the Phoenix station. So
right.
I would just say to my, and of course, Sirius Satellite carries us all across Arizona, all across the United
right.
States, and a lot of people in Arizona listening on the web. So I'd say to our listeners in Arizona, contact your local radio and television stations and tell them that you'd like to see some coverage of what's actually happening in this race, that the J.D. Hayworth race, about him being followed around by these folks who have caught him red-handed.
And yeah,
start calling in, call in the news organizations, call the newspapers. The other thing that you could do here in Portland, when the Downing Street memo came out, the Downing Street minutes, the local newspaper, the Oregonian, which is owned by a multi-state corporation, did not cover it. Not a word about it for days. And so we started talking about it on the radio. I do a local program here in Portland as well. We started talking about it on the radio and encouraged people to go down and stand in front of the building of the newspaper. And they did. There was a protest in front of the newspaper, people holding signs that said, cover the Downing Street Minutes. And sure enough, the Oregonian does a big story on the Downing Street Minutes. Now, I'm not claiming that they did it because of that. I'm sure that they would claim that they didn't do it because of that, that they just did it because they finally decided it was news. But the fact of the matter is that I think that, picketing your media and making the media the story, the fact that the media is not doing its job, that's an important way to get attention to these things as well. So, Carolyn, I encourage you to do all of those things, and I thank you so much for calling in. It's great to hear from you. 1-866-440-8466. Our number, is it Jackie in Philly, Pennsylvania?
No, it's Chuck.
Chuck, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Or Jock. Jock.
Chuck.
Yeah, okay. So what's up?
Let's see.
There you go. Okay, so what's up?
One of the things is you've got to link everything to Republicans, not just like you want to say George Bush. You should be saying the Republican administration, the Republicans in Congress, because what they have done is made liberal a bad word along with Democrat.
I absolutely agree with you, Chuck. You're spot on. And in fact, this is something that I was predicting a year ago on this program. Long-term listeners to the program will know what I'm talking about. A year ago, I started saying, watch, in 2006 and in 2008, Republicans are going to be running against Bush with his permission. Bush is going to, there will be Republicans who are going to be saying, oh, I don't agree with George Bush on these things. And Bush will be supporting their doing that because he knows that the only way he can avoid being impeached and the only way Karl Rove can stay out of jail, whether it's the Valerie Plame case or whether it's the NSA spying case or one of 100 other things, is if they can maintain a Republican majority in the House and Senate. And even if they have to have Republicans running against them, that's what they'll do, and they will continue to do it. So, Chuck, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Bill in Sacramento, California. Hey, Bill.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's on your mind there?
It's been a long time since we've talked. I've been holding on since Bernie, but I've been keeping up with the conversation. I think I'd like to kind of capsulize something and then ask your opinion about a couple of things.
Sure. If it's quick.
It seems that what's really at the crux of what's going on here, and this was a congressional question, is that Bush has been, his administration has been creating backdoor laws.
Oh yeah, the biggest one is his giving $1 billion away to churches in the in 2004, in the election year, by fiat. I mean he could not get that passed through Congress. His faith based initiatives, Congress would not pass that, and so he simply created it by executive order. You're absolutely
right. I've
heard
it something like more like $3.2 billion. But anyway.
Well, it is in total. It was $1 billion for that year. It's been almost $4 billion over the last five years.
But anyway, in the process of doing that, what they've been doing is attacking, step back for a minute, what they really have been doing is attacking the infrastructure,
they're attacking the Constitution.
And so they've been doing it through executive orders, judicial appointments, and signing statements.
Yes.
But all of those things, basic and starting to undertake power through the military process. Mm. What all that does is, the only way we're going to be able to reverse, if we get a Democratic majority in 2006, is one of the first things they need to do is disallow
this order use force. And then they need to go back and just reverse almost every one of these executive orders, like 133-303, where he creates a corporation in Iraq and says that they can't be prosecuted for violations of war crimes, etc. Those are unconstitutional, and Congress can reverse those and then bring that back. And a lot of tax laws they've done, they've given away they've not only usurped congressional power, but they weakened the Constitution, but they've redistributed the wealth to the corporations and the other people away from the middle class.
Yeah, I'm right there. I'm right there with you, Bill. I'm right there with you. And they've
gotten control of our military assets, and they've usurped the Posse Comitatus laws because now they can fly aerial equipment over our country. They've got things in place that will give them federal jurisdiction, any kind of national emergency that he declares.
Extent, Bill, that goes back to Nixon.
Huh?
I said, to some extent, that goes back to Nixon. Nixon was the one who issued the first executive order that gave the president the ability to basically lock down the country if he decided that there was an emergency. And in fact, Nixon, when we finally listened to the tapes, we were horrified to discover that Nixon's discussing with Kissinger whether, if he's facing impeachment, whether he should declare a state of martial law and dissolve Congress.
Right. Well, all these same people that were working with Nixon are right back.
Yeah. Surprise, surprise. Poindexter in charge of the whole shooting match. He's the one who's listening in to you and me when we use the phone.
Exactly. So the point I'm trying to make here is that by doing that, he is gradually setting the stage and the foundation for the president to basically take over.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It's essentially a dictatorship that he is creating. I mean, there isn't another word for it, frankly. And this is exactly what James Madison warned us about. He said, war gives so much power to the executive that it should be avoided at all costs unless it's purely defensive, and even then it should be limited. 45 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, bless his soul, no control, former jelly donut eater. Dope, stashing, clicks, and bashing, flying, Oxycontin meter. Fired color commentator, what a sight to see. After 30 short days, well, what do you know? He pops back up on his radio show. He was preaching away to the ditto heads, while his mate faced the music because he sang to the feds.
I am not a victim in this. Criminals like this should be put in jail. Off the streets, they're the worst kind of offenders. I blame Hillary Clinton. She's the reason for all this. I should have stuck with tequila.
Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. And speaking of our Rush Alert, here's Limbaugh yesterday.
One of my staff is Spanish and informs me that the word macaca in Spanish means clown. Well, I can see why that would offend somebody. That's worse than calling somebody a white N-word. I guess that's far worse than making fun of Mahatma Gandhi and other Indians pumping gas in St. Louis. I had forgotten that. Mr. Snurdly reminds me that Bush 41, that had been a 92 campaign, right? Called Clinton and Gore a couple of bozos. And the drive-by media windows. You can't call people clowns, I guess. Bozos, macacas, what have you.
Yeah. Well, turns out in Spanish, actually, macaca can mean monkey as well. And it's because Spanish is a gender-specific language, ending a word with an A means it's a female. So that means that George Allen was saying, oh, look at that female clownish monkey. Or jokester, actually, is the word. But anyhow, facts and Limbaugh just don't belong in the same sentence. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, KJ in Camas, Washington. Hey, KJ.
Hi. Quick suggestion as far as talking points to the NASCAR dads and Joe's six-pack.
Yeah.
These wedge issues that they are so passionate about, would it be worth our time to point out to them that these issues only seem to come up when their politicians are running for office?
I doubt they would notice. I think what's more important is to make the real issues into the wedge issues, to start talking about the economy. I mean, that's why I wrote this book that just came out. Actually, it's just released today, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class. And because we need to start saying there is a war against the middle class. It is being waged. It is being covertly waged by and large, although it's increasingly becoming overt. And we need to stand up and do something about it and make that the wedge issue, the fact that they're shipping our jobs overseas, that they're importing cheap labor into this country illegally, that they're, standing by watching it happen or encouraging it, facilitating it, and trade policies and trade laws, financial laws. They're making it harder and harder for middle class people to get insurance. If they get wiped out through divorce or through illness, which accounts for 3/4 of all bankruptcies, it's harder for them to declare bankruptcy. They're going to tighten up credit restrictions. I mean, it's just going on and on and on. There's a war against the middle class, and that needs to become the wedge issue, and we can make it that, frankly, because it's true. I mean, it's easy to make wedge issues that are true. So, or, you know, whatever kind of, you know, a wedge issue or a real issue. Chris in Long Beach, California. KJ, thanks for the call. Chris in Long Beach, California. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Delight to talk to you.
Thank you.
I'm a little worried about the presidential pardon powers, and I predict that in January of 2009, he's going to pardon tens of thousands of white-collar criminals, you know, his buddies, probably pardon more people than all the previous presidents combined.
Wouldn't surprise me.
What's that?
I said it wouldn't surprise me.
But another thing, and I had a question for you, let's say he gets impeached. Well, Cheney's just going to pardon Bush. But regardless, does Bush have the ability to pardon himself?
No, he does not. And my suggestion for we've talked about this with Congressman John Conyers, who would be the head of the House Judiciary Committee, which is where, you know, once the Democrats take over the House, which is where a bill of impeachment would have to originate. So it would be in John Conyers' hands, and he's the author of House Resolution 635. But please encourage your member of Congress to sign on if he hasn't or she hasn't already done so. That an impeachment should not be just of George W. Bush. Dick Cheney has committed crimes, high crimes and misdemeanors, worthy of impeachment as well. An impeachment process should go against both of them. That would put Nancy Pelosi in as president.
Oh.
And, you know, that would mean that the Speaker of the House would become president, and I believe that the Secretary of State is next in line. I'm not sure. But it would make Nancy Pelosi president, and assuming that she is still the Speaker of the House after the elections. And so, you know, the remedy here is fairly straightforward. It's impeach both of them because they're both guilty of crimes.
Right.
So step by step. Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Jeff in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jeff.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thanks. You had asked the rhetorical question, who really are the terrorists?
Yeah.
And that just, the whole thing is just, like, bugging the life out of me. You know, if today there was this story about a plane that had to be diverted and land in Italy because they thought there was a bomb involved or something.
Yeah, you had this woman have a panic attack on the flight to New York from the U.K.
Every time this happens, Osama bin Laden must feel really satisfied.
Oh, yeah.
Because the media and the Bush administration is doing his work.
They are terrorizing the American people.
Exactly.
On his behalf. You'll recall Franklin Roosevelt said the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. The Germans had subs off the coast of New York, and we knew about it.
Right.
And did Roosevelt go on TV and say, oh, everybody, look out, there's German subs off the coast. We're going to take them out. Don't worry, we're going to take them out. No, he didn't. He said the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
I'm not saying that there isn't a real threat, but the fact is, we don't have to know about it. For example, the case with this plane in Italy, they could have just said, hey, there's a little bit of a mechanical problem. They didn't have to bring it to light.
No, these guys are all about hyping things.
Exactly.
I'm telling you, the Republican Party has become the party of terrorism and, in essence, terrorists.
Absolutely.
In my opinion. I'll say it on a record. The Republican Party is the terrorist party in the United States. Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. It's 57 minutes past the hour. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. We'll be taking your calls, and I've got a whole pile here of news. Did you know on this day in 1795, George Washington signed? Well, I'll tell you about that after the break. It's really quite fascinating because it's set up. Well, I'll tell you about that after the break, too.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. There are no hereditary kings in America and no powers not created by the Constitution. Right. Alberto Gonzalez says, no, we think that Bush is a king. For all practical purposes. These guys are working so hard to spin the conversation away from the issue of whether or not Bush broke the law and violated the Constitution and try to obfuscate this, to try to obscure it, to try to mess it up so that people don't get it, that what we're talking about here is not whether or not the Bush administration will wiretap people, not whether or not the Bush administration should track down people who may be terrorists or who may be planning harm against the United States, or for that matter, any other, you know, drug lords or whatever. It's not it's not that. That's the issue. The issue is whether you can do that without a warrant in violation of the law and the Constitution. Not whether you can do it or not. Whether you can do it or not without a warrant. And that distinction increasingly is not being made in the media, which frankly, in my mind, is a crime. And absolutely is not being made by all the right-wing apologists running around loose. I mean, you get James Carafano, senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation. He says, I think the opinion is almost devoid of legal reasoning. It's probably one of the most irresponsible decisions that I've ever seen coming in the wake of a terrorist plot in London that would have killed thousands of Americans. What, because we've got a terrorist plot that would have killed thousands of Americans, we should blow off the Constitution? Before the break, I told you, I'd tell you about what happened on this day in 1795. George Washington signed a treaty. It was called the Treaty of Amity, Commerce, and Navigation between His Britannic Majesty and the United States of America. That was the official name of the treaty. It was also known as the Jay Treaty, because John Jay was one of the main guys who negotiated the thing. He went over to England and he signed it. He put it together in November of 1794, came back to the United States, and on this day, almost a year later, it was signed by George Washington. Now, Madison and Jefferson absolutely opposed this treaty because they felt that it was giving up too much power to Britain. Basically, what George Washington was saying was, we will declare neutrality if you'll stop hassling us. Because the Royal Navy was seizing our ships in the West Indies. They were holding, the British still had military posts along America's northern and western borders. They were seizing our sailors and basically harassing us. I mean, King George III did not take the loss of the Revolutionary War lightly. He was seriously upset. And George Washington thought he could make peace with King George III. Well, you should know that any George who's the third George to have ruled a country is probably nuts. I don't know why. It's just like, you know, when Mercury goes retrograde, weird things happen. I mean, it's just like one of those laws of nature. Let's see. George Washington, George Bush Sr., George Jr. Yeah. George I, George II, George III. Yeah. Anyhow, the significance of this treaty that was signed on this day in 1795 by George Washington, the so-called Jay Treaty, the significance of it is that in a very real way, it set up the War of 1812. Now, what does the War of 1812 have to do with yesterday's ruling by District Judge Anna Diggs Taylor? Here's the connection. Bush is running around now, or the Bush administration, the Republicans. In fact, I should go beyond that. These fascists. I mean, you've got this stuff coming out of the Heritage Foundation. You've got this stuff coming out of right-wingers left and right. They're running around saying, oh, no, we have to set aside the Constitution. Because we're at war with terrorists, don't you know?
Because Osama bin Laden, a guy that we've decided isn't really all that important. Right?
So I don't know where he is. Nor, you know, I just don't spend that much time on him. I'll be honest with you. Again, I don't know where he is. I repeat what I said. I truly am not that concerned about him.
Yeah. But that guy, because he hijacked some planes and flew them into the World Trade Centers and the Pentagon, therefore we need to give up the Constitution. Well, I would respectfully say, or seriously say, that in saying that, the Bush administration and the Republicans in Congress who are enabling them are spitting on the graves of Jefferson and Madison, who opposed the Jay Treaty, of John Jay, who negotiated it in good faith, of George Washington, who believed that it might get something through. Because in the War of 1812, which the Jay Treaty, in some historians would say, set up, because basically by appeasing England, we didn't resolve the issues, bottom line. We ended up fighting a war with England. That in the War of 1812, the British actually took Washington, D.C. They actually burned down the White House. They didn't burn it down. They burned it. James Madison, the sitting president of the United States, had to flee the White House. Dolly was running around, his wife, running around gathering up paintings. And they fled the White House because the British troops were advancing, and the British seized the White House and set it on fire. And James Madison did not see fit to suspend the Constitution. Now, here you had America actually not just at war, not just a few evildoers on our land. You had a foreign country invade us and seize the friggin' White House. And did James Madison, who was the president at the time, think that we should set aside the Fourth Amendment? No. In fact, if anything, he felt it was more important to defend the Fourth Amendment and the First Amendment and all the rest of those, the rest of the Constitution, the separation of powers. So I say, you know, these guys are spitting on the graves of the founders of this country. It is a tragedy. It is an absolute tragedy. It is an absolute crime. And when Judge Anna Diggs Taylor says there are no hereditary kings in America and no powers not created by the Constitution, she is speaking, she is channeling the founders of this country. And for these right-wingers to come out and say, I think this opinion is devoid of legal reasoning. Victoria Tenzing, former senior Justice Department official and chief counsel of the Senate Intelligence Committee, another Republican. She, Taylor, the judge, she ignores the inherent power of the president to collect foreign intelligence. It's terribly unsophisticated ruling. Yeah, right. Jonathan Turley wrote a piece some time back about whether or not a president can be prosecuted. In answer to a question that was posed a little earlier, can the president be prosecuted? And I use sovereign immunity, and Terrence sent me an email, and thank you, Terrence, saying, hey, wait a minute, this is a republic. The people are sovereign, not the president. You're right. He said, what you're talking about is executive privilege, and you're right. And here in 2000, Jonathan Turley wrote this. He says, the image of a president bandled from pillar to post by the courts has tremendous resonance for anyone concerned about the doctrine of separation of powers. Thomas Jefferson's articulation of his concern in his letter to George Jay on June 20th, 1807, reflects the inherent tension between the model of an accountable chief executive and the necessity of an independent executive branch. It is a question that begs an answer with every scandal involving allegations of criminal acts by a president in office. During the Clinton crisis, the susceptibility of a sitting president to indictment and prosecution was only touched upon in the debates. The primary thrust of the constitutional debate focused on the meaning of high crimes and misdemeanors. But he says earlier on, these things have been discussed. He says the question of indicting a sitting president is often raised as part of a scenario in which impeachment efforts fail and an indictment is pursued as an alternative and less credible form of punishment. This creates the false impression that impeachment and indictment are variations on a common theme. In my view, they are not. He says impeachment serves a distinct non-putative function. The bottom line here, it runs on for several pages, but the bottom line is basically he's saying, in his opinion, a president in all probability could be indicted. Interesting. Very interesting. 16 minutes past the hour. Truth and common sense in broadcasting. I'm Tom Hartman.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Free. Welcome back to the place where smart people get their news. Jonathan Turley, from Pillar to Post, the prosecution of American presidents. He writes, as stated in the Senate hearing, I believe that the indictment of a president is constitutionally permissible and in some circumstances essential to the preservation of core constitutional principles. So, there you go. The question of indicting a sitting president is also often raised, you know, I need not actually bore you with the legalese. That's the bottom line. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. It's Friday afternoon. Anything you want to talk about, give us a shout. Sean in Syracuse, New York. Hey, Sean, what's on your mind today?
Hey, yes, I was wondering. I've been studying the Constitution for a while, and I understand where we've gone astray. How would you suggest, you know, as a newbie to the movement, we organize, you know, locally? I mean, because obviously we got to start at the local level and to build momentum, right?
DFA is, there's a bunch of great organizations. I would join MoveOn.org. I would join Democracy for America. I believe it's DFA.org. It might be DemocracyForAmerica.org or .com. Actually, I think they're using .com. This is Howard Dean's brother's organization, Jim Dean's organization.
Okay.
I would show up at my local Democratic Party meetings and if you feel inclined, join the Green Party, or if you feel inclined, join the Republican Party. I mean, I would join and get active with a political party, maybe even two of them. If I was getting active with the Greens, I'd also get active with the Democrats so that I could have some say in both. You know, trying to move the Democrats closer to the Greens, trying to get the Greens, you know, more outspoken in local issues and the Democrats more outspoken in national issues. Ultimately working toward instant runoff voting so that both can have equal say in all issues. I think that the process, very simply, is getting involved with local groups. And there are local groups, Sean. I guarantee in Syracuse you're going to find all kinds of them. You just need to start looking around.
Okay.
Okay?
What's your opinion on the Libertarian Party?
Libertarians, in my mind, are Republicans who smoke pot.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the bottom line. The Libertarians are economically conservative to the point of extremist, and they think that there should be no laws that regulate drugs or sex. And, you know, I agree that with them with regard to drugs and sex, I think that prostitution should be decriminalized, and I think that, you know, drug abuse is a medical problem, not a legal problem, and we should be dealing with it with our medical system, not our legal system. So in that regard, I agree with the Libertarians. A lot of people notice that about the Libertarians and think, oh, they must be liberals. No, I'm sorry, they're not. The Libertarians want there to be no regulation of business whatsoever. They believe in laissez-faire economics. They want to take us back to Victorian-era economics. They believe in economic survival of the fittest. They don't believe that in community. They don't believe that we're all in this together. Libertarians are Republicans who smoke pot and like hookers available. So I would not ever call myself a libertarian.
Well, I appreciate that analogy of it.
Sure. Good to hear from you, Sean. Thanks a lot for the call.
All right. Thank you.
Good talking with you. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Roy, you may have some suggestions for Sean.
Well, what I tell Sean is get down to your precinct meetings, find out who your precinct captain is, get a hold of them, get involved.
This is the Democratic Party.
Yeah, preferably the Democratic Party. But again, take back the Republican Party. Charles Barkley said, I was a Republican until they lost their mind.
Yeah, there you go. Well said.
You know, and I saw...
Well, that's true of you too, isn't it, Roy?
Me too. I saw a bumper sticker that played off of that. It said, Republicans were so much nicer before they lost their mind.
Yeah, there you go. It's.
I just wanted to report a couple things, Tom, and you know, maybe stir some stuff up because we're coming into the weekend. Hopefully candidates are out there stumping and whatnot. We had a great rally here in Albuquerque yesterday. Nancy Pelosi, future president of the United States, baby.
Yeah.
Came in to stump for Patricia Madrid. Halliburton Heather is on vacation, so she wasn't able to attend Dick Cheney's fundraiser the day before.
Oh, the poor dear.
But anyway, the thing that I found so interesting was I wore my Veterans for Madrid T-shirt, and I was on my way up to the office, and I had to make 5 stops on the way to the office. It took me 3 hours to get back up to the office. I took 2 people were solid Madrid folks. I took 2 people who were undecided. Well, gee, I don't like either one of them. They're both throwing all this dirty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever. I converted 2 undecideds to solid Madrid, and I took 1 Heather and got her to undecided.
Okay.
So I figured it was kind of a good trip, you know, and simply, I guess, and what I did, and I dialed in when you were talking to Carolyn out in Arizona. I used the Madrid for our Veterans for Madrid T-shirt. That's kind of a neutral T-shirt. But get a T-shirt that opens conversations and then have some handouts. Have your facts nailed. Pass the handouts and convert them one by one. And then they can turn around and do it the same.
Yep, it's viral marketing. It's viral politics.
That's right.
Roy, good on you. Thanks so much for the call and for the tips. And great to hear from you. Always great to hear from you, Roy. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, where despair is not an option. Get active, my friends. Well, you're watching the slow evolution of a talk show host who's learning something as he's doing. He's learning on the fly here. I finally decided to read the Constitution during the break. Article 1 of the Constitution, which is the legislative branch. Section 3, which defines the powers of the Senate. Okay. Section 2, of course, about the House of Representatives. I'm just looking here. Yeah, okay. Section 2, first of all, about the House of Representatives, says, quote, "The House of Representatives shall choose their Speaker and other officers and shall have the sole power of impeachment." Period, end of sentence, end of section. Now we get to the Senate. See, the impeachment is the indictment. That happens in the House of Representatives. The conviction, the actual trial, happens in the Senate. So now we go to Section 3. Of Article 1 of the Constitution. Paragraph 6, "The Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments. When sitting for that purpose, they shall be on oath or affirmation." In other words, the Senate is operating under oath. You cannot lie during the process of trying a president. "When the President of the United States is tried, the Chief Justice shall preside, and no person shall be convicted without the concurrence of 2/3 of the members present." So it requires a 2/3 vote of the Senate, and the Senate is not presided over by the Vice President, who's normally the President of the Senate, but instead is presided over by the Chief Justice. Why? Well, maybe because the founders anticipated circumstances under which both the president and vice president could be impeached, or maybe because the vice president and the president could be close, they're part of the executive branch. Well, arguably, though, the vice president is part of the legislative branch because he's the president of the Senate. It depends on how you shake it out. But by and large, the vice president is considered, he's listed under Article 1, so he, or Article 2, rather. So he's part of the executive branch. But then here's where it gets interesting. The paragraph 7, judgment in cases of impeachment shall not extend further than to removal from office and disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. And then there's a colon. Okay, in other words, that first half of the sentence says basically all the Senate can do is kick somebody out of office and disqualify them from ever running for any other office in the United States. But then after the colon, the sentence begins again. But the party convicted shall nevertheless be liable and subject to indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to law. Now, here's where it gets sticky. That second part of the sentence starts out with, but the party convicted shall nevertheless be liable and subject to indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to law. In other words, if a person is if a president is successfully impeached by the House of Representatives and then successfully tried by the Senate and convicted, they can then be indicted and tried and judged and punished by a court. But what happens if they're not convicted by the Senate? The argument has been made by some legal scholars throughout the years that if they're not convicted by the Senate, according to this, paragraph 7, section 3, article 1 of the Constitution, then they can't be indicted. But Jonathan Turley argues that this is what this says is not that. It does not say that they can't be indicted under any other circumstances. What it does say is that just because someone's impeached doesn't mean that they're disqualified from being indicted. In other words, they can still be indicted after they're impeached. It doesn't mean that they can't also just simply be separately indicted. Which brings me back to the Hamdi case. I mean, you know, if the Supreme Court has ruled that the Bush administration, George Bush specifically, committed war crimes, operated in violation of treaties that the United States has signed, specifically the Geneva Conventions and the United Nations treaties, why is he not being prosecuted for war crimes? Well, obviously the answer is very simple. It's that the prosecution would have to originate in the Justice Department, and the Justice Department's under the firm control of George W. Bush. Sherry in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Sherry, welcome to the program.
Well, you just answered my question, which I was going to ask. And the only other thing I was going to say is, couldn't we call them the Republican Party? But anyway, that's all.
Yeah, okay, great. Thank you, Sherry. All right. That's a good point. First of all, why isn't he being indicted? He's not being indicted because the instrument of indictment is in his hands, that is the Justice Department. And secondly, if the Republicans are going to call the Democratic Party the Democrat Party, then what do we call the Republican Party? Maybe we should call it the Republican Party. Can you imagine a Democrat sitting next to a Republican on Face the Nation saying, well, the Republicans or the Republicans? I think the Democrats should start doing it just for theater, just as pure theater. Not in a mean, spiteful way, the way that the Republicans are doing it. But have the Democrats start doing it just as theater. Or call them the Repubs. You know, as the Repubs would do, the Repub Party.
What? It's not the Repub Party, it's the Republican Party.
Well, it's not the Democrat Party either. It's the Democratic Party. 1-866-440-8466. Michelle in Long Beach, California. Hey, Michelle, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Hey, you know, I was calling today mostly to kind of say that, you know, we really need to concentrate our efforts. And, you know, it was the ACLU that brought this lawsuit forward. And I just really think that, you know, we're spread so thin, you know, there's that impeachment petition that you see in the emails.
Ramsey Clark has put that out, a former Attorney General of the United States.
And it's great, but my thing is, and you know, I'm just a member, you know, I donate monthly. And
of the ACLU.
Yeah, but I really think, you know, the DOJ has already said they're going to appeal this. They're trying to hold off, put a stay on it, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why don't we all just really, you know, send $5, you know, $2, whatever we can send to the ACLU, because they've got a fight ahead of them.
I agree with you, Michelle. I agree with you. That's one way that we can support democracy in this regard. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, Tom, it's just we are spread so thin. So let's be diligent and direct in our efforts. I mean, I'm sending out emails to my friends and family telling them, look at the ACLU site. Go try to support them, if you can, monthly, just like your program. I mean, you need support. But this is our kind of inroad. We really need to back it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thanks,
well
Tom.
Said. Thank you, Michelle. I appreciate it. And to support this program, support our sponsors. If you hear a sponsor, call them up. Say, hey, thanks for, you know, advertising on the Tom Hartman program or on Air America Radio or Progressive Talk Radio or wherever, whatever it may be that you're hearing us on. By the way, I'm waiting for the other shoe to fall. You will recall that the Bush administration, when Ned Lamont won the primary against Joe Lieberman, the Bush administration got on the horn to Tony Blair. And Keith Olbermann just laid this whole thing out with his 13. He did 10 on the air, but he's got 13 on his website. His 13 coincidences where every time the Bushies get in trouble, within a day or two or three at the most, there's a terror alert. The Bush administration got on the horn to the Blair administration or to Great Britain and said, you know, those guys that you've been watching that they're thinking of trying to blow up a plane across on the Atlantic, arrest them now. We need the publicity now. We're going to try and help Joe Lieberman and take out Ned Lamont. I mean, every Senate seat is critical. And plus, this could have an echo effect. If we can hurt Lamont and help Lieberman, it's going to cause other senators and members of the House of Representatives to be worried about taking an anti-war stance. And so we found out about that because it got leaked out of the administration, out of the UK. It was leaked that the Bushies were the ones who suggested that the arrest be made early and that, in fact, the Blair administration wanted to wait. Scotland Yard wanted to wait. They were watching these guys. They didn't have enough evidence yet to actually arrest them. But they went ahead and did it anyway so Bush could get his talking points. Well, I'm wondering when we're going to find out about the phone call that was made to the government of Thailand. I'm seriously wondering, when are we going to find out? Thailand is an ally of the United States. We have a strong relationship with that country that goes back a long, long way. And I, last night, watched the prosecutor in the Ramsey case talking about how, basically, you know, we haven't finished building our case yet. I mean, she said it through what she didn't say, that they were not ready to arrest this guy, that they didn't have the evidence. So why was he arrested when he was arrested? I mean, it's the question that all the media was asking yesterday. Why was this guy arrested when he was arrested? This doesn't make any sense. All the legal commentators. Well, I would submit to you that he was arrested when he was arrested because the Bush administration called up the Thai government. Because yesterday, the NSA segment, Bush violating the law, got 27 seconds. The Ramsey segment got 7 minutes 39 seconds. I mean, this is throughout the 24-hour period. These are minutes and hours. These are hours and minutes. This can't be right. Yeah, it is. 7:39 for the Ramsey segment, less than 27 for the NSA segment. Same with CBS, same with ABC. Just massively more coverage of the Ramsey story than the NSA story. Surprised? 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And
and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Ain't life great? Every day we wake up drawing another breath. It's such a gift. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. David in Blaine, Washington. Hey, David, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Hey, since we're talking about the FISA court, not much has been said about the FISA judge that quit the court.
Right.
When the story first blew
yeah.
the headlines.
That's because he has not sought the limelight. I mean,
right. I think he'd make a great segment for a future show next week.
He's not doing media.
Oh.
He's not talking. I mean, he's
well,
the guy conducted himself very professionally. He was a secret
yeah.
judge in a secret court, and he quit basically in secret.
But
know?
It's not okay now. FISA's not secret anymore. So people need to refresh their memory about why the Bush administration is covering up or trying to cover up their tracks when they clearly, you know, broke the law.
Yeah.
And they need to be in jail.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you, David. I can't get the guy on as a guest. You know, we've already checked into that. But raising the issue, yeah, I'm not gonna stop.
Or maybe even just bring back the FISA experts.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Okay.
Thanks,
thanks a lot, David. Oops, sorry about that. Gary in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Gary.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I think the jury is in, the president, vice president. They lack a real respect for the Constitution and democracy. And in that vein, I like to quote Thomas Mann. Democracy is internal and human. It dignifies the human being. It respects humanity.
Yep. Well said.
Yeah, thank you, by the way. If you could ever get John Dean on.
He's been on this program three or four times.
Oh, I know you have. Oh, I know I have. Of course, as you know, he's got that new book out.
Yeah. Yeah, we had him on about it a couple of months ago.
Pardon me?
We had him on about it a month or so ago.
Oh, okay. I must have missed it. Okay, Tom. Thank you.
Sure.
Have a good
two
days.
Thank you, Gary. You too.
Bye.
Have a great weekend. David in Bainbridge Island, Washington. Hey, David.
Hi, Tom. About 6 weeks or so ago, the young man called in from the state of Kansas, and he was frustrated because he couldn't have any literature that he could show the Democratic Party platform that he could use to campaign. Mm-hmm. And you advised him to go to his local Democratic headquarters or Green Party.
Yeah.
And I'd like to take issue with a Green Party situation. We have in Washington right now a former member of the Black Panthers who is running for the Green Party in the Senate against Marie Cantwell. And he said, I don't care if I take any Democratic votes away.
Mm-hmm.
In our last governor's election here, our Democratic governor won by 152 votes. If the Green Party candidate had been active then, we would have a Republican governor right now.
Yeah, see, that's why I have so much respect for David Cobb, who ran for president on the Green Party platform in 2004 and said that he was going to run a strategic campaign. And he actually, you know, fought folks in his own party over this, saying that in those states that were going to be tight races, you know, he basically was not going to campaign. And he was only going to campaign in those states where he knew that he wouldn't affect the outcome. And I just have tremendous respect for that. And the point that you're making is another reason, frankly, why I think people of goodwill should get involved in the Green Party and take it back also, so that it's not just a party of not to say that it is entirely at this point, but we don't want a party of angry judges, right? We want a party that wants to participate in democracy.
But a vote for a Green Party is a vote for a Republican.
Right now,
that
yeah.
At the
national level, yes. But on the other hand, there are over 200 communities, maybe over 300 now in the United States that have instant runoff voting or that have had significant election reforms, publicly owned financing of things, of elections, things like that. And in almost all cases, it was the Green Party that brought it about. So, you know, at the local level, the Green Party is doing some really good stuff around the United States. I don't deny that,
but a vote for them in an election will put as a vote for Republicans.
In a federal election. I agree with you, Dave.
They support the Green Party in the national election. They pay for their campaign ads.
Yeah, no, I know. The Republicans
and we
down
have
in Florida.
George Bush because of the Green Party in 2000.
Well, that's arguable.
It isn't arguable. They had 85,000 Green Party votes in Florida. On exit polls, they said... out of three voters said if they had to make a choice, they would have voted for Gore.
I agree with you, David. I absolutely agree with you. But keep in mind, the 2000 vote in Florida was stolen by Jeb Bush and Catherine Harris, who knocked 90,000 eligible voters off the rolls because they committed the crime of voting while black. And to lay the blame for that on Ralph Nader, I think, is wrong. Although, as I said, I worked against Ralph Nader in the 2004 election, even though I voted for him in 2000. But I voted for him in the state of Vermont, where I knew that it was just a statement vote. It was not a problem vote. But you're absolutely right, David. A vote for the Green Party in a tight state, in a tight race like Washington, yeah, is a vote for the Republicans. And that's why down in Florida, you've got the Republicans funding a Green Party candidate. I mean, it's wrong, in my opinion. By the way, special thanks to my producer, David Poole, Louise Hartman, to Lauren Kirshner and Alex Goldmark and Tim MacArthur, who are normally producing this program and right now engineering this program. And right now to Andrew and is it Julian in New York at Air America, to Ben and Shelby at White Rose Society, RadioPower.org, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. Thanks so much. Coming up on Monday, I'll be challenging conservative Frank Gaffney on his new book, War Footing, 10 Steps America Must Take to Prevail in the War for the Free World. And Paul Craig Roberts will be here. Remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.